What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Rock Your Brand podcast. Today, we are going to be diving into the Etsy ads game and how to play it, but also how to win it. Chris and I recently sat down and we love to gamify whatever we're doing. In business, it's all about trying to make it fun, but also where you can gamify it. So this way here, you can look at it and go, okay, let's try to get to level one. What is level one? Or let's try to get to level two. What is level two? So we came up with three levels and really kind of reverse engineered what we have done, what we continue to do. And really, I think something that is missing, it's definitely missing. There's a lot of Etsy sellers that just don't understand the Etsy ads game. And that's what we're going to do today is we are going to break this down, level one, level two, and level three. And we're going to hopefully help anyone else out there that is struggling with Etsy ads or not running them yet, which actually leads me to asking my first question of the day. And that is, who right now is running Etsy ads? And if you are here live, drop it in the comments. If you are here watching the replay, drop it in the comments. Let us know. And we can go ahead and see, kind of get a little bit of a poll going here and see who is actually using Etsy ads. Chris, with that all being said, I know we've got a bunch of stuff to cover here today, so I want to get right into it. And I know people want to get right into it. Where do you want to start?
Let's start at the beginning, Scott. And I know you and I talked about some of these different levels, and I think we called level one the foundation. So let's just start. Like, a lot of people that we talk to say, hey, like, I've got all these listings. How many ads should I run? What should my budget be? Should I just throw $50 on everything? What does that look like? So, Scott, if we're thinking about level one here, if we're thinking about creating this foundation, what does that actually look like for people? What should people be doing at the very beginning? Is there a basic set of rules that we can give to everybody?
Well, it's great, Chris, that you set up that question because you know the answer, and I'm going to go ahead and give you the answer, but we're going to go ahead and explore the answer. And that is, level one is really about creating the expectation, but more importantly, creating the foundation. Once you understand the expectation and really what we are using ads for, I think before we even get into playing the game, we need to understand how it actually works. And with the expectations of not just looking at ads as, okay, I turned on ads and I went ahead and I got a sale. Like, that's what people are signing up for, right? When they're playing the game, they're like, all right, I'm playing this game. And the way to win is to put a dollar in and make a sale. Like, that's what we're trying to do. Or put a dollar in and make two sales. That's even better. Or maybe three sales. But what a lot of sellers are doing is they're not looking at the full picture and really how that flywheel starts to happen and really helps support and promote the rest of your products or even that individual product. So I think the first thing that we need to understand before we even start playing the game is that right there. Now, we did do that on another video. I'll link it up in the description. So this way here you have access to it. But it's something also that we talk about in our Etsy ads guide. If you have not yet downloaded our Etsy ads guide, which kind of goes through our entire strategy, our philosophy, our methodology, all of it, then just in the comments, put ads. If you write ads, it's three letters, put ads in there, and we'll go ahead and we'll make sure that you get a copy of that. Okay. It's really important that you understand before you even get started and kind of like how it all works. We actually break down the strategy that we use and everything in between there. So make sure that you download that. So this way here, you have a good understanding of it. Okay. Now that I've kind of set that up, let's get into level one. Level one is the foundation. That is where we're setting the stage, right? We're trying to get everything dialed in as much as possible in this level one. And we start with one of the most important things, and that is choosing the product that we're going to be promoting. Now, a lot of times people, they'll just turn on ads on all of them and put a dollar budget and expect that dollar to get reach on all of these products. What we want to do is we want to focus and we want to be able to have the best chance of winning using ads. But what we want to do is we want to also then make sure that that product's getting demand, okay? Because if it's not getting demand, you're going to turn on ads and you're going to be disappointed because you're not going to be getting any traffic. And if you are getting any traffic, it's going to be very little. And then you're going to get like one click and go, it doesn't work. No. So we have to make sure that we have good demand. Okay. Making sure that, and what demand is really looking at, okay, how many sales is this thing even getting per day for all of the other competitors out there? Everyone. Okay. What is that? And kind of doing a little bit of research there to see what you can expect. So there's your expectations. Once we have that, and we know that we have a product that we could put some ad money behind and it could, you know, get us some traffic and get us some sales. Well, then what we need to do is we need to optimize for the sales. And the way that we're optimizing for these sales is we need to make sure that our listing is dialed in. It's what the people are seeing in the thumbnail and they're clicking on and they're going over to our listing. And then they are going to see that, yes, I clicked on this image and yes, that's what I want. And when I get there, it's just reconfirming what it is that I clicked on. Okay. So there, if there's ever a disconnect there, if you're running ads already and you're seeing that they're not working, that's where we always start looking. That's you're still in level one. Okay. And so what we want to do here is we want to start making sure that our images are dialed in. Okay. We also want to make sure that if we're running ads on that, you don't have to, but I would definitely recommend it, is I would put a video in the video slot, because that's going to also draw attention to that ad while it's being displayed. But your thumbnail, your main image, is the most important thing, because that's what people are going to see first. And that's what's going to get them to click. Okay. So we want to make sure that that's dialed in. We also want to make sure that our title is representing the product that they're looking for. Also, we want to make sure that the title is dialed in, because that's what is being indexed inside of the Etsy algorithm. And that's what's going to help us get displayed, okay, for the right search term. And that goes right into, well, what kind of tags are you using? Etsy tells you specifically that tags are a piece of criteria that their algorithm is looking at to display your ads to the right buyers. Okay. And then, of course, the other things, description. We want to make sure that that's well written. We want to make sure that it's giving people all of the information that they would need to buy. And then the other thing is if you have reviews, you want to make sure that you put some of those reviews right in front of those people and put one like in an image slot. So those are some things that we want to optimize. The other thing is one other thing that doesn't really get talked about is if we're running ads on that product, and if it's a new product specifically, then what we want to do is we want to make sure we also are running a sale. All right. And Etsy just came out with a really cool little study that they said that they were seeing that people that are running 10% sales are not converting that high. But what they did notice was 25% was converting way better. So that's one little thing that we're going to make sure that we're using is the 25% for right now. And we're going to test it. But that's something, if you want the best chance of your ads working, you need to make sure that this foundation is set and it is all ready. So this way here, when we move into level two, okay, moving into level two, we need to have all these other things done before we even think about doing anything in level two, which we'll get there here in a second. Chris, what did I leave out there, or did I leave anything out?
Yeah, I think the real secret to level one here, right, if we're going with that guide, that walkthrough, right, the old Nintendo Power Magazine level walkthrough of how to make this work from a foundational standpoint, Scott, we're not talking about driving traffic at this point, although that does happen. The real key to setting our foundation here is having a well-crafted listing from a search optimization standpoint and having an optimized listing based on what we know, right? So we're creating something that can lead to organic traffic that will get us in the range of where we want to be for the keywords coming back from Etsy, right? So we're making sure we're including all of the relevant keywords that we're aware of, at least at this point. Our ads data, as we move through some of these different levels, will give us more and more of those keywords that we may want to include or re-optimize for. But at this point, we're taking our best guess. So before we even get into our couple dollars a day budget, before we get into this, setting the foundation for Etsy ads, the first level, is actually about crafting a quality listing. And the reason for that is if we have a, for lack of a better term, crap listing, no one's going to buy. We can drive all of the traffic in the world, all of the hyper-qualified traffic in the world. We can be the only person on the Etsy platform that sells Chris dancing avocado mugs or whatever it is. And somebody can even type in Chris dancing avocado mug. And if our listing does not do a good job in connecting that search term to the intent of the customer, if it doesn't, answer the questions they have about the materials or the make or how it's printed in the description. If it doesn't have images that show that it's a dancing avocado on one side and it's got Chris on the back or whatever, then they're still not going to buy. So all of the traffic in the world is not helpful if we don't set that foundation. And this isn't rocket surgery. We don't have to sit around spending all day every day trying to craft the perfect wordage, the perfect images, but we do have to take into account what we already know and then create that listing. The second step here, Scott, is to make it enticing. We want to entice early purchases. In most cases, that is going to involve us running a bit of a discount, because what we're trying to do in this early stage, whether that traffic is coming from ads or organic, is increase that conversion rate. One thing we know that increases conversion rates is running promotions. And to the point that you just made, Scott, Etsy's CEO said in an interview over the weekend, they had typically advocated as 10%. That was kind of their baseline rule. And what they found was, because that was kind of the minimum for them to show a lot of things, that was what everybody picked. And so their goal now is to say, hey, that doesn't convert as well as higher discounts. I don't know if he said 25% is like where they found the best target is, but obviously if it's higher than 10%, right, 25% is a safe target. And that was the number that Etsy CEO threw out as something that they were trying to educate sellers on. So if we're setting that good, solid foundation and we're creating an environment where people want to purchase, then even with a limited budget, we will start to see results. And that's really, Scott, in my mind, what level one is all about, is about creating that foundation, creating an environment where you know if you drive qualified traffic, that people have the actual opportunity to purchase the things that you're selling, and then driving that qualified traffic in a very slow and controlled way. And yeah. I know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I mean, in level one, we should also mention, like, once you have the foundation set, you have all of the pieces in place, yes, we are going to start with a low budget. So I just want that, because to move into level two, we need to have some data. And I think it's important for people to understand, like, the second part of level one is really turning it on. Okay. And then from there, we're going to, in level two, we're going to step back and we're going to be able to now analyze and evaluate. And we'll get to that here in a second as far as like what we're going to look at. But part of level one is foundation, right? Getting all that stuff in order, and then low budget, let's get it turned on so we can go ahead and then we're going to move into level two. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up, because I don't want people thinking like in level one, you're not actually turning on ads. You are. So yeah. Anything else you want to add to level one, or you want to move right into level two?
The conversation I know that a lot of people are going to have, and I'm actually surprised that it hasn't come up in the comments yet, but I know that it will if we don't address it, is, Scott, in this level, and I know we're giving a little bit more general advice and a little bit of a roadmap for people, but in level one, what should our budget look like? What should we expect to spend? And then how many listings are we accounting for in this foundational level one stage? Is it everything in our shop? Yeah. Is it, let's take our top 10 best sellers? And is that different for seasoned shops, people with a couple hundred listings, mm-hmm. versus new sellers who are just getting started?
Yeah, I think when you're first dialing things in, it's going to be better to have a very tight budget and a very focused product list, let's say, right, that you're going to be advertising. It's going to allow you to really, really hyper focus on that. Now, once you get rolling and you get more comfortable and you get into level three, I would say that's where you would probably then say, okay, let me go ahead and add more products. But in the beginning, we want to keep it super simple. The other question I want to ask right now, because I know that there's going to be a question, or there's going to be, you know, people saying that they can't because they just don't have the money or whatever. I'm curious right now, and I want you to be 100% honest with me, and I'll be honest with you. Who spends money on a coffee or a frappuccino or a cappuccino or an iced tea or whatever your drink of choice is in the day? How many buy at least one drink a day? I just want to know. Just drop it in the comments. What is that drink?
The other one that I would throw out there is, are you ordering from Uber Eats, DoorDash, any of those equivalent services once a week or more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the coffee thing because I do buy a coffee every, you know, every day. Generally, it's when I'm going, you know, to my daughter's beach volleyball. I go and bring her to practice or a tournament or whatever. And I'm driving for an hour. So I like to have that coffee. Now, could I brew at home? Yes, but that's my treat. That's the only thing I do one, right? And I generally will treat myself. Okay. But that's like, for me, it's, I think it's like $3.15, something odd like that, right? But I got a cold brew yesterday with my son. Cold brew is more expensive. That was like $5 for a large. I was like, man. Okay. So the reason why I'm saying this is because a lot of people make it seem as though they don't have enough money to run ads, but they got enough money to buy a drink. And I'm using it as a drink because it's usually once per day. And yes, we can say Uber Eats, how many times are you doing that per week? You can get into that, right? We could break that down, but I think everyone can relate. Like probably buying that one little drink or that one little snack that you like that you just enjoy, right? Like everyone has.
So that I think is the other thing. That's the reason I went like the Uber Eats DoorDash route, is because for a lot of people who aren't coffee people, that's kind of their once a week splurge. They're like, I'm going to order Wingstop once a week. And if you order it through Wingstop, it's like $15 less, but you got to go pick it up and then you're spending on right? So there's a lot of little things that start to add up over time. And I think the thing that most people don't realize is if we're talking $3 to $5 a day, Scott, that's like one meal out a week or one, you know, medium-sized coffee a day. Right. And so there's a lot of these little things that we can make some small adjustments if we're serious about growing our business to reinvest that. And somebody in the comments had said, you know, I spend enough at, here it was, Sherry Poppins said, I spend too much at the casino on a regular basis. I should be able to afford ads. Right. I would say, rather than going to the casino and playing a slot machine, let's play the Etsy slot machine, because that's actually something that has a real positive return on investment if we do a little bit of work once we get through this initial stage. Yep. Right. And so we have a lot of people saying, yes, they're doing DoorDash is a ripoff. I do drinks. I don't do DoorDash, or I do DoorDash. I don't do drinks.
Yeah.
So let us know what that vice is for you. And is there something that, you know, your life would probably be better off financially without, where we can reinvest that money, whether it's that daily Starbucks, whether it's, I know you're a Dunkin' guy. Like they know you by name, right? So you have that going on.
It's really bad when you pull up to the drive-thru and they recognize your car and they go, just the large today.
That has never happened with you. At least when I've been in the car, never, once. So it's really about trying to figure that out. And if we're serious about growing the business, it is potentially making that little sacrifice for the first few months until we get those sales rolling in. And then because we're going to be scaling and optimizing, we can start to add that coffee back in. If that's really the thing, and I don't think, Scott, that you would be advocating that anybody cuts out their one vice or like the thing that gives them the most joy in life. But occasionally we do have to put some of those things on the back burner, right? Just because you like having a margarita, it doesn't mean that having 10 is good for you, right? Or that you should have one every day. Make that a special treat and then reallocate that budget to something that will give you a positive return on investment.
So Chris, so I don't want to keep going down the rabbit hole here of like drinks and all that stuff, because we get the point, right? The point is if you're complaining you don't have enough money for, you know, for ads to turn them on, even $2 a day, there's probably $2 a day somewhere that you're spending that you don't need to spend. So that's the point. Hopefully we made that. And thank you guys for sharing. A lot of you say you're making your coffee at home and bringing it with you. You guys are awesome. You guys are more disciplined than me. Okay, let's move on to level two. Okay. I think we need to move on to level two. So we said level one is all about expectations first, right? Before we even get into that. But then from there, once we understand it, we know what we're doing, we're going to go ahead and we're going to start level one. And level one is going to be making sure that everything is set. So this way here, when we do turn on our ads, we have the best chance of them succeeding, but we also need to turn them on and start with a daily budget. Now, $2 a day would be probably my minimum, but I probably am going to start with $5 a day. Why? Because I want data faster. That's just me. Okay. But if $2 is all that you want to spend, fine. It's perfect. But it's going to at least allow you to start doing the things that we need to do in level two to identify if what we are selling is getting noticed, if it's getting clicks, if it's getting sales, and what's bringing in the people, right? Like what kind of keywords and stuff. Okay. So Once we get into level one, or we're going to move out of level one, is after we've done all that. So now let's say that we've done that. Now, usually what we're going to do is 5 to 7 days later, okay, we're not going to touch anything. That's the other thing. A lot of times people are in there and they want to touch things, right? Like, oh, it's been 24 hours. What happened, right? Sometimes it takes Etsy to understand who it is that you're reaching. Okay, so you have to give it a little bit of time. So we always tell people at least give it 2 or 3 days before you do anything, if you're going to do anything. But a lot of times it's like set it and forget it for 3 to 5 days. You know, 7 days is even better. Okay. So once we do this, okay, once we again start everything, now in level two, it's all about evaluating the data. Okay. And I always tell people too, this is also a great thing. Even if you're not getting sales, you're getting data that is exactly what Etsy is saying about your product, about people that are searching for your product, what keywords you might not be showing up for. And it's going to also give you recommendations of tags that you might not be capitalizing on. So all of this happens, and it's not a tool that you need. You just need to spend the money on the ads in order to get the data. And once we get the data, now we can start making some decisions. Now we can start saying to ourselves, okay, did we get any views? We did. Okay, cool. That means that we're showing up for keywords. Okay. We don't know yet maybe what those keywords are because it might be too early, but at least we know that we're getting views. Okay, cool. We know that we hit the demand thing right. Then we're going to say, okay, did we get any clicks? Oh, we got a couple clicks. Okay. Did anybody buy? No. Okay. Too early. We got 2 clicks. We're not going to do anything yet. Okay. We're not going to change anything. We're not going to go into our listing. We're not going to do any of that stuff. We're still going to give it more time. Then we're going to wait a little bit. And then we're going to say, okay, after 5 days, what do the numbers look like? And by this time, we should be able to see we're getting views. Okay. People are actually seeing it. We're getting clicks. And then from there, we can see, okay, the clicks that they might not have led to, or they might not have led to a sale, but it is going to show us now, usually that much time is enough where we can go, okay, there was 9 keywords that drove people over to our listing. Now we're going to be able to look at those and go, oh, something is too broad, right? Let's say that I'm selling a bass fishing sweatshirt. Okay. And you're showing up for fish and that led over and you got 3 clicks from that. Well, we don't want to show up for that. We're going to turn that one off. And that's where we're going to start to adjust. But we're also looking at the data to say, hey, did we hit the listing right? Does the listing have everything included in it to allow us to show up? Because the first part is showing up. If we can't show up, we can't get a click. So that's the first part, is looking at your views. Then after you look at your views, we're looking at clicks. Then after we look at clicks, we're looking at sales. And if we didn't get sales, we need to determine what is the problem, or is there not enough clicks yet? And on those clicks, where are they coming from? So this is in this stage, we're kind of looking at things. We're seeing where we can adjust. We're seeing if maybe we're showing up for too broad of keywords, or maybe we got 50 clicks right out of the gate and we didn't get a sale. Then we're like, okay, well, wait a minute here. Let's take a look and see where are all these keywords coming from. Maybe 20% of them are good and the other 80 are bad. Well, we got to turn them off. So it's more or less you're training the Etsy algorithm for what your product should be showing up for and to who it is showing up for. So Chris, that's level two. What part of level two did you want to discuss further, or did I miss anything in level two?
So level two in my mind, Scott, is really where we're putting on our data nerd glasses, right? We're turning ourselves into Jimmy Neutron, just to give a shout out to the chat. We're turning ourselves into that nerd level here just a little bit, right? We don't have to be data analysis experts, but what we do have to look at here in level two is figuring out what's working and what's not. And there's a few different key areas that I wanted to dive into. The first thing is, are we getting eyeballs, right? If we're not getting impressions, then something is wrong. And we don't want to look at this an hour after we turn ads on. Typically, I would suggest when you're just getting started, wait 7 to 14 days. And then after you've gone through that initial period, 14 days to a month, right? You don't have to get in and tweak this stuff, especially because we're running at a low budget. Getting in and being a little bit more clicky or click happy, tends to actually have a negative effect because you're not letting things run their course. But with that in mind, so we come in after 14 days, something like that, and we're looking at the data. If we're not getting impressions, that tells me that there's one of two issues. Either we don't have the correct keywords, right? We missed something in that foundational stage, or there's just no traffic for those things. And we have to go back to the sales evaluation process, the product evaluation, product research process with something like Everbee to figure out if anybody's buying anything in that market. If we're starting to get some impressions and we have a few clicks, then we can go one step deeper in that analysis and start to really figure out whether those clicks are relevant or not. And before I would turn something off that is relevant, I'd want to see at least 50 to 100 clicks in there, right? To really have an idea of what's going on. But where I would look in that first 7 to 14 days period is at anything that's obviously not relevant or anything that's extremely broad and wouldn't be something a normal human being would type in to find your product, right? I know one of the examples that we've given in the past, Scott, is somebody who sells custom wood signs, right? One of the ad terms that they showed up for and got some clicks from was wood. Well, could someone logically make their way to a custom wood sign from the keyword wood? Yeah, maybe, but there's like 90 hurdles in there. The 99.9% likelihood is that they're trying to find lumber or unfinished wood that they can use for a project themselves, right? And so we're going to go in and we're going to turn those things off and start trimming those out. Then we have to do that with the rest of our listings and come back. And we're just going to make our way through that process. Are we getting impressions? If yes, move to, are we getting clicks? If we're getting clicks, are they relevant? And if they're relevant, are they then starting to result in sales? And again, we want to see that 50 to 100 click level before we start really turning off the relevant ones that aren't leading to sales, because we're going to expect a 1% to 3% conversion rate for most people here, which means if we get 100 clicks, we should have at least one sale. And if we're not getting that, then we're going to run into some issues. Is there anything that I'm missing there, Scott?
No, I think you nailed it. And I think it does come down to then just looking at the data. But a lot of people, all they're looking at is surface level data. They're not drilling in, like we said, Chris, and they're not looking at like the granular data, which is those keywords, and kind of seeing where we might be missing. Or you might realize, and I saw a question come in, or I think it was just a comment that basically said that they're running, I don't know, $10 a day, but they're only spending $2 a day. And the issue there to me, without even looking at everything, yeah, there it is right there. I'm running Etsy ads $5 a day, but in almost 2 months, never used the $5 a day, not even close. I was thinking about removing some items and increasing the money for the ones that are doing better. Thoughts? Yeah, Pedro, I do have some thoughts. It sounds like two things, or one of two things. Either there's not enough demand for your products. Okay. That's like first thing. If you say, no, there is, I've already validated it. There's a ton of sales happening and I know that there's traffic, right? I know it because I looked at the sales data, not keyword data, by the way, not keyword in tools like Everbee or any of the others. Love Everbee, by the way, but I'm not going to base my decision on traffic by looking at their keyword estimates, because that's all they are, is estimates. But if you're not getting, if you're not spending your budget, that tells me that there's not enough demand for that product. Or, okay, let's underscore or, okay, or you're not targeting the right keywords that have demand for your product that people are searching for. So it's either the first one or the second one. But it has to do with, if you're spending, if you're willing to put $5 out there and it's not spending $5, the chances are there's not enough traffic for what you have optimized for what you are telling Etsy that your product is about or who it's for. Chris, did I leave anything out on that?
No, I think that's an important point, because that really is step one in the evaluations. Are we getting impressions and clicks? And if we're not spending our budget, it's probably not a budget issue.
No.
Unless, right, that budget is $1,000 a day, $500 a day, maybe even $100 a day, depending on your niche. But if we're in that $2 to $5 range, and that's why, Scott, our suggestion for level one is that we start in that range. If we're not hitting that $2 to $5 budget, we're not going to hit a $25 budget, we're not going to hit a $100 budget. And Etsy actually does something really interesting on the ad side. And I know you know this. When you first start running Etsy ads, they have a much lower cap. I think for most accounts that I've seen, it starts at a maximum of between $15 and $25 per day that you can spend. The reason they do that is so that you don't just throw $1,000 at it right away. But what you'll notice is if you start spending, let's say your limit, and I think the one in our test account is 25, right? So we set our budget at 25 and we're spending $15 to $20 a day. You'll get an email after a few days that says, hey, we raised your maximum budget that you can spend. If you want to raise it, go ahead and do that. I know you tried to push it to the limit to throw out.
Isn't that a song?
Yeah. just to throw out some mid-2000s rap lyrics in the middle of this.
We did. We actually, we tested that. I did a video on it. I mean, we tried to spend $1,000 a day, and we didn't. I mean, I think the most we spent was just under $200. And that was in Q4. So just because you're willing to spend it doesn't mean it'll spend it. And it doesn't mean that there's not enough demand there. You have to look at your expectations once again. Right.
And I think that's the real lesson here.
Yeah.
Is if you're not hitting that, there's a reason. Now, if we're in that $2 to $5 range, that reason is probably there's not enough demand, or your listing is unoptimized for where the traffic is actually coming in. If we're at that $100 range, that's where it's like, well, do we just add in a few more products or do we just not care? Because we know in October, November, December, I'm probably going to hit that or exceed that and be able to push that up a little bit. So that's why we suggest starting at that low range, because it gives us an idea of if we did the rest of level one correctly. And once we've determined that we have, then we can really dive in on level two and say, where can I start to trim out to make sure that all of the money that I am spending is relevant money to be spent? So that not only am I spending $5, but I'm spending $5 on extremely relevant things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And I think it was perfect that we were able to bring that up from Pedro. And Pedro did say that he's definitely improved. His first, products were not that great of demand. Now that he goes back and he's learned how to find the demand. So, probably now you're going to get better results. So really, really good. Also, let me throw this out there for anyone that's just joining us or maybe came in late or maybe skipped ahead. If you would like a copy of our Etsy ads guide, which walks you through our strategy for when we are starting to run ads, when, as far as the strategy, the structure and all of that stuff, just put ads in the comments and we'll make sure that we get you a copy. Okay. I think it's under 20 pages, but it walks you through exactly what we're doing, but also kind of what we're covering here in this, in this live stream. So if you'd like a copy of that, just drop ads in the comments and we'll make sure that we get you a copy. All right, Chris, we got to move on. Got a lot of stuff to cover here. Let's move on to level three. Level three is pretty easy. Okay. It really is, but it also means that level two is working. Okay. Because you're not going to get into level three ever if level two is not working. And what I mean by that is if you're not seeing the results of you getting the sales that make sense for you. Now, here's what I mean. I don't mean that you have to be running ads and they have to be making as much profit as an organic sale. That's not what we're saying. That's never going to happen. Because like I said, in the very beginning, you have to understand how the flywheel works and all of the other benefits that happen from those sales. So for us, like if we're, even if it's, I don't know, maybe it's costing us $2 for a sale, $3 for a sale, and we're only making $7, or maybe we were making 20, but now we're making 15 and I'm giving up $5 for that. Okay. I'm still going to run the ads because I know that there's a lot of other things happening. One is I'm getting sales to that listing. That's signaling to Etsy that this product is selling. So they're probably going to want to show me more in organic search as well. The other thing that happens is we're probably going to get more reviews. So now if we get reviews from that, well, that means that now people that are coming in organically are also seeing those reviews and I'm going to convert higher. Plus, if I'm running ads and I was converting at 1%, well, now I might convert at 1.5% or maybe 2% because I have more reviews. The other thing is people come in, they're going to get my thank you coupon and they're also going to get a message that's sent through Etsy that I already pre-set up that's going to invite them to join our VIP club. And now I have someone that's going to be on my email list. So there's so many other things that are happening. The other thing we didn't even talk about is when someone's coming through from an ad and they add the product to cart, well, they're going to get a notification saying like, hey, take off a, you know, whatever, 15%, 20%, whatever you want to try to encourage them. If someone favorites the item and they don't buy it, they don't add it to the cart, none of that, they're going to get a notification. So there's all of these other things that will just give them reminders, but also that can build your reviews, also build the sales velocity, which will also help you in organic search. So these are all the things that we look at that, yes, we might not make as much money from that sale, but we get all of these other benefits. And I think that's a really important thing to always keep in mind. We even look at that as far as like when we're launching a product, we'll go break even for the first 7 days just to get sales velocity, just to get reviews. So we're always thinking about that. And I think that's the one thing that's not talked about enough. And really that is an advanced mindset for marketing, for e-commerce, like the big e-commerce brands get it. If you've ever watched Shark Tank, by the way, if you guys have watched Shark Tank, let me know in the comments. I'm a Shark Tank fan. I watch them pretty much every night, either while making dinner or whatever, we turn it on. But you always hear them say, what is your cost for acquisition, for acquiring a customer? Like, what does it cost you? And why are they saying that? Because sometimes people will pay $20 and lose money because they know that they have a customer now. So I'm curious, how many of you watch Shark Tank? There's some good stuff on that show, by the way. But level three, very simply, is scale. We're going to scale now. We're going to now take that $2 budget, that $5 budget, and we're going to ramp it up. And Chris, I don't know if you saw the comment, and we'll talk about the scale, and I'm going to kind of give you the floor here. But we just had a comment come through, and I forget where it is. Chris, maybe you can find it. And where she was afraid to spend more than $5. But then after watching some videos from us, she decided to go crazy. Yeah, there it is. I was afraid to do more than $5 a day when I had just started watching your videos several months ago. I went crazy and started $15 a day, and my sales were crazy in December and January and February. Okay. So when you scale, okay, you have to also make sure that your numbers, okay, are good, okay, or good enough. Let's put it that way. Okay. And then once they are, you start to slowly scale that up. You don't go from $5 to $100. You would go $5 to maybe $10. And then $10 to maybe $20, and then $20 maybe to $25. But like Chris said, when you're first starting, you're only going to be able to spend up to whatever they give you that cap. And a lot of times it's maybe $25. And then you have to graduate, and they'll tell you as soon as you start spending more. So the third level is really all about scaling up and spending more on the ads because they're working. So Chris, what else can we add to the scaling part? There's not much there. I know that. We've got to look at the data, but we already looked at that in level two. So,
yeah. Unfortunately, Scott, I don't have any Rick Ross lyrics about scales or increasing budget or adjusting. But I think the thing that's important here is if we do level two right, level three becomes easy for us. And all we're looking at is how quickly do we feel comfortable scaling, whether that's going from $5 a day to $10 a day or pushing it to the limit, right? To go back to those Rick Ross lyrics and going from five to 25. And seeing what happens. But it's all about the data that we get back in level two. And the real secret here, Scott, is that most people think that once they've done the evaluation and adjustment, that unless they've changed their products that are included in the ads campaign, or it, you know, maybe it's Q4 now, that they don't need to go back to level two. But my little nugget here, and I want your opinion on this, is let's say we go to 5 to 10. Before we go from 10 to 25, what we should really be looking at is going back to level two, getting all the power-ups that we can from level two, right? Going back, saving all of the wasted dollars that we might have, and making sure, again, that $10 is optimized. Now, we don't have to do this on a daily or weekly basis. Once you've done this a few times, even going in monthly is probably more than enough. But I would suggest doing it before you scale again. Again, keeping those basic things in mind. Are we getting enough impressions? Are we actually spending the current budget that we have or close to it? And are those impressions that we're getting, are those clicks that we're getting leading to sales and coming from relevant keywords? And we're just going to go back and forth between levels two and three until we get to a place where we have this running on autopilot. And for some brands, that may be $20, $25 a day. For some brands, that may be $50 a day. For some brands, that may be $500 a day. Where your upper limit of this is really depends on the overall demand in your market. But once we've set the foundation, then we're really just floating between levels 2 and 3 to make sure that we're spending everything that Etsy will let us spend to generate profitable sales and to get that data back. And then increasing how much we spend, coming back, making sure that we're spending everything that Etsy is allowing us to spend to get profitable sales and drive quality traffic. Scott, let me throw a quick wrench in the works while Maisie loses it on the delivery guy and ask, how does new listings factor into this? So we have 10 listings that we're running ads on to start with. Again, just throwing out a number, guys. That's not what we're saying it has to be. We add some new listings into the shop. Are we going through this process all over again? Like, how does that work once we get through levels 2 and 3 and we're just kind of rotating back through those on a weekly or monthly basis? That would be the question once Scott makes it back. So the question, I didn't see you walk away. The question is, if we're adding in new products, because that is the only thing we haven't really talked about here. Yep. That is technically part of scaling.
Yep.
Right. But is there something special we need to do? So let's say we have that $20 budget. We're spending 15. We know we can spend more because we have some new products in the shop. Is there anything special we need to do in order to get those into this flywheel of levels 2 and 3?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing when adding new products is I wouldn't just add new products because you have new products. You still want to make sure that they have demand. And I would only be focusing on those products because you can have products that have less demand in your shop, but you don't want to pay to get people to see them because they have less demand. At least that's how we do it. So I would say if you're adding other products, you want to make sure that those products have good, solid demand. And I wouldn't just add them to add them. But to your point, if you have a brand new product, you think it has demand because you've done your research, then yeah, we're going to get a little bit more aggressive with that. And the way that we really focus more attention on that is we reduce the, well, we don't reduce the price. We add a higher coupon, okay? So, or a discount. So instead of it being 25%, we might do a 50% off discount for the first 7 days. Okay. And then from there, we know that we're only going to make a dollar maybe after our expenses and fees and the ads. That's okay. We figure that in and then we just get really aggressive with pricing. But that's the only difference. And actually, we do talk about this in the Etsy ads guide that I mentioned earlier. If you guys are just tuning in or if you haven't downloaded a copy yet and you would like a copy and kind of see our entire strategy and kind of how we go through this in scale, go ahead and put ads in the comments and we'll make sure that we get you a copy. All right. But Chris, that's the biggest thing for me is like, I think if people have 100 products that they're going to start to advertise, number one, you're taking that budget and you're spreading it out to make it try to reach all of those different products. And if those products are all, they all have good demand, you're going to run out of budget real quick, or it's going to be throttled with inside of Etsy because Etsy wants to be able to advertise your stuff, but it's going to have less frequency now. So you have to be careful with that. One other thing, Chris, I will say before we wrap up this section is another mistake that I see people making. And I think that they feel as though if they reduce the amount of inventory that they have, even though they have the potential because it's print on demand to do as much as you want, they reduce it because they want it to show like, you know, only 5 left in stock. That might work okay for your ads because you're going to drive traffic. But when you're looking at the organic side, it could actually hurt you because then Etsy might look at it and go, oh, they don't have enough inventory. So we're going to kind of pull back how much traffic we send them because we don't want them to not be able to deliver. So that's one little thing that I just kind of wanted to bring up that could be a mistake. But Chris, let's kind of wrap this up, put a little bow on it. Why don't you do a little recap here of level 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah. So if we're trying to run Etsy ads, if we're trying to play this game the right way and the way that gets us the best score at the end, right? The most sales, the most traffic, the most favorites, and quite frankly, Scott, the most profit. There's really 3 different levels to this game. The first one is setting the foundation. And that's where we're going to really focus on listing optimization and low budget testing. And when we say low budget, we mean $2 to $5 a day. But the real key to that is making sure that with the data that we have at the beginning, a little bit of common sense and a little bit of ingenuity, and maybe a few tools that help us figure out some of these keywords, how can we create a listing that is not only going to completely answer all of the questions that somebody might have once they get there, but entice them to click? How can we write a good title? How can we create a video? How can we add in some good supporting images to make sure that if someone comes to our listing, they are likely to buy? Once we've done that, we've set up that initial budget, again, $2 to $5 a day is what we're talking about in most cases, then we can kind of level up to level two. And what we're really talking about there is evaluation and adjusting. So we're going to give this a minimum of 7 to 14 days in most cases to be able to get a little bit of data back. And what we're looking for in this initial stage is, are there any keywords that people are clicking on that are clearly irrelevant or that are way too broad for us to ever expect to get a sale out of? We're going to turn those off. Or are there any things that really stand out to us that don't make sense? Once we get a little bit more data back, then we can say, okay, when we come in and we go look at things in level two, are the relevant clicks leading to sales? And if they're leading to sales, are those profitable? But the first time we go through that evaluation phase in level two, we're really just looking to make sure that the keywords are relevant. When we start to come back, that's when we're going to really look at, are they turning into sales? Are those sales profitable? Right? At the end of the day, if they're not profitable sales, then there's an argument to be made to turn it off. In a lot of cases, I can make the counter argument depending on what your goals are. But if your goal is to be as profitable as possible, then you potentially want to consider turning those off at that point. Level three is then going to be scale, which is increasing your budget and adjusting. We're going to be adding in new listings, making sure that as we go through that data analysis from level two, every dollar that we're spending is pushing us towards that goal of more and more profitable sales. And once we've gone through that initial budget increase, we go back to level two, evaluate and adjust. And then we go back to level three, increase budget, add in new listings, and see how much traffic and how many sales we can get out of Etsy, scaling that as much as we want, feel comfortable, or to that upper limit of whatever it is that our niche will allow in terms of overall Etsy traffic.
Perfect. Wow, you did a great job on that. Okay, so here's the deal. A lot of questions coming in, and we're going to do our best to answer as many as we can. If you don't already know, we do have a Backstage Pass Club, and you may notice that some people that are leaving comments have a special badge next to their name. So, you know, congrats to you guys having that badge. We appreciate you. But what that means is we always... We kind of put those questions first. We're going to make sure that we try to get to those first because they are our Backstage Pass Club members, which we meet with usually once a month to do some Etsy shop audits. And, you know, we talk Etsy. But if you'd like to be part of that, you can just go to brandcreators.com/club and you can become a member, or you can just click join if you're on YouTube and you can go ahead and do that. It's under 10 bucks a month. So if you're interested, go ahead and do that. And we're going to get to those questions here, but we do have a couple other things that we're going to do. And we have one little surprise. So all of you that have made it this far, we've got a really cool surprise. And that is we are going to do a live Etsy ads review from someone that submitted it to us the other day and wanted our feedback on their Etsy ads. So we're going to be able to peel back the curtain and actually look at this and give you our thoughts or give them our thoughts. And you're going to be able to sit in on it. And this is kind of what we do on our Etsy shop audits. So you'll get a little sneak peek at how that works as well. But if you guys are getting value from this, do me a favor, smash the like button and maybe subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't done so already. That helps us with the algorithm inside of YouTube, by the way. So we'd appreciate that. We can reach more people. All right. So with that being said, Chris, we've got some good stuff here. And I think we're good timing right now. We've got about probably, I don't know, I want to allow about 10 to 12 minutes to go through this. So if we can do that, because we got something else we want to share too, which is pretty crazy news that happened in it happened from someone, I guess, playing it as though they were Etsy. It's some weird news, but anyway, we'll share that with you. I don't even know where to go with that. It's crazy. All right, let's go ahead and let's get started, Chris, on this Etsy ads audit, I guess. So yeah, can you go ahead and make that a little bit bigger? Can you bring your screen in? There you go. That's better. Okay, cool. Now let's just test it real quick. Make sure the
question.
I can hear it. Okay. I went through. Actually, Chris, play it and let's just make sure everybody else can hear it too.
ads challenge that you guys did a while back. And also I have PID on demand.
If you guys can hear that, drop that in the comments for us. Let us know. So this way here we can keep going. And then Chris, if you want, pull me back full screen real quick and I'll set this up. Cause see guys, what we're going to do is we're going to cut this part and this will be a dedicated video for the channel. See how we work. This is the behind the scenes stuff that you see in Backstage Pass Club. This is what we do. All right. So we are going to dive into an Etsy ads review that was submitted by one of our students. So Chris, if you could pull that up right now and we can go ahead and listen to the video, listen to what is happening, and hopefully we can we'll give some insight, give some advice, maybe see what the heck's going on here.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
So, Scott, the first thing, before I even hit play on this, am I the only person, let us know in the comments, that is having a little bit of anxiety based on the number of tabs that are open at the top of the screen share? No shade. I'm not saying that's the problem with your Etsy ads, but that's the very first thing that I noticed before we even watched this video. It gives me a little bit of a heart attack. I'd never be able to find anything, and I'd be the one closing the thing that I'm trying to open. But with that being said, let's dive in and hear what the feedback is and see if we can dive to the bottom of it.
I'm going to work through some issues on my site. I've made a couple hundred bucks overall, but I've put a lot more into Etsy ads and other things than I've gotten any returns out of. I did post a while back, kind of showing a picture of some of the research. So basically, here's what I found. I have a D&D niche. We had talked before, and I did have some other kind of like content creator stuff on my site as well. On my Etsy. So I went ahead and I made the Everbee, QR code. I made this new tabletop tea banner. So this is my main shirt that I was advertising to. The reason I picked it is because it was by far getting the most traffic and the most clicks and a lot of favorites, but people aren't buying it. And so these are my analytics here for the last 30 days.
Hey, before we dive, I was going to say, pause right there.
I wanted to get your feedback because one of the things that we talk about in terms of optimizing Etsy ads is really understanding the foundation, setting the foundation for that listing optimization.
Yep.
Obviously, the one thing that really stood out to me was he said, I'm set up to collect some emails. Great, great place to start. But just based on what you saw on that previous page, does he have good thumbnails? Is that video something that would attract attention? Like just looking at the listings really fast before we dive into the data. Mm-hmm. Is the foundation here set in terms of visual appeal and all of that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. No, I mean, very first thing is it's very generic, and what I mean by generic is like you're looking at a t-shirt that's on a wood background or, wood plank background. And it's basically, the same as everyone else that they're doing out there. I think part of the reason, now we're going to look at the clicks and stuff like that, but I think the part of the reason it's not converting is I think it also doesn't show it on someone. And I think that's a conversion piece that a lot of people miss is people want to see it as if it's being used. Okay. So I think to your point, Chris, I think that the mock-up could be done a lot better. So it shows an actual person and it doesn't even have to show the full face. It could just, you've seen them before where it shows like from the nose down. But it just, to me, it needs to stand out better, as far as, if someone's scrolling, they're seeing it's kind of in competition with all of the other black t-shirts. Like there's nothing that's making it stand out to me.
And I think the thing that I like that is going on is the designs look good. They look clean. Yep. I like that we're using video, and using video at all is like step one of this process, yep. right? Then we can get into some of the nitty gritty. He's probably ahead of a lot of the competitors in terms of the fact that there's a video at all on that top selling listing. Yep. The question is there a better way for us to optimize that? And we'll start to learn that as we do a little bit of a deeper dive into the data. So let's let him share that with us.
Yeah.
Let's see, I can go even further. Let's do.
Hey, Chris, pause again real quick though. Can you go back? I just wanted to see those numbers real quick again. Yeah. Okay, cool. Right there. That's fine. If we're looking at, so I want people to understand, like if we're looking at views and clicks, okay, he's got a very strong view and click, and you can see a 2.1, okay, 2.1% click-through rate. Chris, is that good or bad?
Yeah, I would want to see a minimum of that 1% click-through rate, yeah. which we see in that second listing there.
Yep.
2.1 is great. And that is I believe that's the listing we just saw at the store view that yep. has the video as the main image, right? Yep. So that is going to be a reason that we're going to get a click-through rate. Now, this is not the end-all be-all. And as we start to dive into the data, we'll really start to understand this a little better. This is the surface level. A lot of people, Scott, and we see tons of people making this mistake, is they say, oh, I'm getting a great click-through rate. Nothing could possibly be wrong. Yeah. But what I'm seeing when I see that is 108 clicks. That means we should have at least one sale from this.
Yes.
Right. And that's on the low end. And I'd really rather see 2 to 4 sales mm-hmm. in this click range. What yep. that immediately says to me, and I'm sure it says something similar to you, is that there's either a conversion rate problem on the listing, or those clicks aren't coming from a place that makes a lot of sense for our listing. And if we're just getting started in Etsy ads, it's usually problem 2, right? Yeah. There's a lot of keywords or junk traffic coming in because Etsy's still trying to figure out exactly who we should be getting along with.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Keep on going here. Let's see what we
further.
Got.
Let's do custom March. I don't know. Let's just do January. January to now. Okay, so January to now, I turned the ads off for a while. I guess this is basically all those. And so you can see I got about 5,000 views. Actually, I think that's just in March. you can see up here.
Which is a lot.
Let's do this year. So this year I've gotten about 8,000 total. The majority of those views, I guess I can just do that on here too, right? This year, okay. So the majority of those views are on this one Rule of Cool D&D shirt, which I can do. It's not against the rules or anything like that. And then I also have this D&D/Christian shirt, which is Jesus is my cleric, which is just making a joke about Jesus. And then also like a cleric is a healing class in D&D. So I've gotten a few sales overall from these, but you know, perfect. Just not many. Lifetime orders 3, right? So I'm trying to figure out what to do about that. So I have a ton of keywords, and as I went through them, you know, like.
Yeah, we want to see this here. So, okay. And someone had said in the comments too, skirting on trademark. What's the deal with Dungeons and Dragons? You and I talked about this before, because I said the same thing one time, and then you were like, no, there's actually a thing that they can do it. Like they give them permission, which is shocking to me.
So just proof that I have weird knowledge about random things for no reason.
You do.
That actually happened to come up when D&D changed their licensing.
Okay.
So they used to be basically a completely open license. And then a few months back, as of the time of recording this, they went to a license where it was basically open, but up to a certain dollar amount. And then they went back and they changed it again. But D&D is one of those rare cases where, yes, technically it's trademarked, right? It is a game, but it is something that inside of the licensing for the use of that, they allow the community to create merchandise, to create lore, to create a bunch of different things for the community, because what they've realized over time is that by letting people do that in an open way, it brings in more players to the D&D universe, and then they sell more of the official D&D stuff, right? D&D is just short for Dungeons and Dragons, right? So this is a weird edge case. If he was selling Disney t-shirts or like Goofy t-shirts, it would be different, or Star Wars, right? But in the case of D&D, they have a different licensing structure than most people who have trademarks, copyrights, all of those kinds of things.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, I just wanted to clear that up. Okay. So we're looking at this now. So we look at the clicks that, he is getting. It looks like Dungeons and Dragons, 117, right? Or is that views?
So that's, that should be views. Let me go back here a couple seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So it's views, clicks, orders. So okay. Scott, the very first thing that I see here, and this is an example of something where this keyword could be good or it could be a poison pill, right? Yeah. This is something somebody typing in Dungeons and Dragons has a chance of buying his t-shirt because it's Dungeons and Dragons related.
Yep.
However, is it relevant enough to a specific t-shirt in this shop that it's likely to result in sales? I'm curious about your opinion on that.
Yeah, I think personally, you're right. Okay, I don't know if we've had enough data, but I would say Dungeons and Dragons is very specific, but it's so broad. It's like, it could be Dungeons and Dragons, a case for the game, right? It could be, a sweatshirt that someone was looking for, or maybe it was, a decoration, or maybe it was a gift for someone. Right. And yes, you could say that could be it, but if we're advertising, we need to make sure that that thing that is being searched for is really, really close to what we have to offer. Because like you said, someone could be curious. They're not really interested. They saw it. They thought it was cool. I'll click on it. It cost you those three clicks, but it didn't result in a sale. And that's because it was just a little bit too broad. So I'm not sure if I would turn it off yet because we haven't had enough data, but that is something I'd keep an eye on.
And the reason that I bring this up specifically is because the example that you and I give is somebody who sells custom wooden signs.
Yeah. Right?
If they had the word wood here, we would turn that off because that is, yes, it is relevant to the niche, but that's like saying we sell bass fishing stuff and somebody typed in the word fish into the Etsy search, right? They could mean they want to buy fish for dinner. They could mean they want pet fish. They could mean, there's a million different things that they could mean. And especially in the case of something like Dungeons and Dragons, where there's figurines, there's custom dye, there's all of these kinds of things. It's probably not where we want to see those impressions coming from. I'd rather see the longer tail variation of that. That would be Dungeons and Dragons shirt. I'd be very comfortable with that keyword, right? So the way to figure this out, if we're not sure about to turn this on or off, is to type that in to Etsy and see what comes back. If they're showing us a wide variety of terms, right? They're showing us some t-shirts, they're showing us some of those things, I'd leave it on for now. But if Etsy and their algorithm says, when somebody types this in, what they're really looking for are dice for Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
You'll see that in the search results. The vast majority of the organic traffic will be directed towards those results because Etsy's goal is to drive people towards the products that they're the most likely to purchase. And so if that's the case, then we'll start to see that reflected in the search results. If they just don't know, then we can leave it on for a little bit and start to figure it out ourselves on the back end. If it's very obvious that it's not our product, then I would come in kind of right away and turn it off.
Okay, cool. Let's keep going.
So I have a ton of keywords, and as I went through them,
so that perfect example, D&D shirt right underneath that, right? 80 impressions, one click. That's what I would want to see.
So that's like what I want to see.
Keyword pruning, like you guys were talking about. The majority of these keywords all make sense as far as like they're all D&D related.
They make sense, but they don't specifically make sense for the exact product. That's where we have to be careful. So I just wanted to say that, like, in his head right away, he's like, no, these all make sense. It says D&D. Like it is, you know? But in reality, it might be not specific enough when we're advertising.
Perfect example, and I'm highlighting my screen like y'all can see my mouse. I guess if I bring it over here, you can. D&D stickers, right? Yep. Obviously, not a D&D t-shirt. Related to D&D, yes. A potential buyer, yes. Yep. But a waste of that ad spend if they're clicking. Now, in this case, they're not clicking on that. We're getting a few impressions, but that would be something I would want to turn off. And then if we see something like Paladin, which is typically a class in role-playing games, right? RPG, yes, this relates to RPG, but again, probably too broad. TTRPG, tabletop role-playing game, right? Dungeons and Dragons, technically a tabletop role-playing game. So it is relevant to our niche, but not relevant to the product. And if we want to optimize our spend, we need to be really careful with how broad we let those terms go.
The majority of these keywords all make sense as far as like they're all D&D related keywords and things that I think, like, if someone was going to D&D stickers, they might also want a shirt. Kind of thinking from a point of view of like a brand, or, you know, the same kind of market might want the same sort of stuff. So there's nothing in here that super stands out to me as weird. Like even RPG shirt. I don't know why I turned that off. So like Dimension 420 is a tabletop RPG show, D&D Sorcerer, tabletop RPG. Like these are all role-playing Crawler Carl. I have no idea what Dungeon Crawler Carl is, but it sounds like it could be similar. Mighty Nein is another tabletop RPG show. This is a character from a tabletop game. So it's all related.
Okay, so I wanted to just make this point again. Just because it's related doesn't mean we should leave it.
Exactly.
Now, the cool thing that we can do with this data is we now know that there's some interest in whatever Morkborg is. You know, what was it? Dungeon Crawler Carl. As long as that's something that's not trademarked, we can use these as potential product ideas, but this is not what we want to see at the product level in our ads data. Now, granted, not a lot of these have clicks, so we don't need to be hyper worried about turning them off, but if we can turn off the irrelevant stuff, it does help Etsy really understand this is not a TTRPG shirt. Yep. This is a Dungeons and Dragons Dungeon Master shirt, or you know, whatever the specific thing is. And so we do want to come in and trim some of these really obvious ones out. Don't discard the ideas, but no. Make sure that if it is relevant, that you kind of put them in your back pocket to think about, is there a way I can incorporate this into my store? Because it is niche related. And this is a great place to find additional niche related ideas, just not very relevant to this product.
So one thing I want to just highlight here too, is that the good news is you're indexed for all these keywords. That's a good thing. Okay. It just means that you don't want to show up so much for paid advertising. Do you want to, what I would say, I don't want people that are searching for Dungeons and Dragons to come over and see my listing. No. Yeah. Come on over. Like that's fine. But do I want to pay for it? Maybe not, because they're not really looking for a shirt. Just because it's related, okay? Fish is related to bass fishing, but if someone's looking for a bass fishing gift, I don't want to show up for fish, okay? But do I want to show up for fish if someone's searching for that organically? Sure. So this is a good way also to kind of test your listing against the Etsy algorithm to see what you are actually being indexed for. So I just wanted to kind of make that point.
But my, and I'm getting like, okay, click through rates, you know, so here on 100 views in the last,
that is good. It should
be. Yeah. That's not an okay click through rate. Just to clarify, that's a great click through rate.
Yeah.
The problem is it's probably too generic for this product, but it tells us that there is demand there and there's definitely interest in his product.
A lot higher than that, but maybe just this keyword. It came up 117 times and it got 3 clicks. It's calling that high. I don't know why. So, any ideas you guys have, I can show you the listing too, which might help. So if you click through, I have a video, you know, because
I was
told that that.
So, yeah. So, I mean, just going back to my first initial point is, the shirt is very generic. I would want it to really represent the player, right? The person that is there. So almost like having that player, is it male? Is it someone that's in their 30s and their 40s? Like that's what I would want to see. And even on the background, I would want it to represent maybe a little bit of a moodier feel or something, because, you know, maybe that's the feel. So you almost want to match that with that. So, you know, is it okay? Yes. But I'm even looking at it like the tag is drawing my attention there, right? Like I'm like looking at it, I'm like, oh, it's a tag in the back of the shirt. Like, so this here, I think needs a human in it. It needs to be a mock-up that is better than this personally.
So Scott, you see some of the supporting images here.
Yeah.
Would you rather see one of those?
Even totally.
This last one here. Let me see if I can get my mouse.
Yeah. We can't really click on
this one.
Yeah.
Where we can't click on it. This is a video, right?
Yeah, so we're in a video
where it looks like he's throwing dice or something like that, right?
Totally.
He's playing D&D. It's not a distraction. We can have this image as a backup image if they want to see the entire t-shirt laid out. Cool. Totally fine. Yeah. Would I go into Canva, Photoshop, get rid of that tag? Probably, because I had the same issue as you. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
It may look a little different if we were looking at the actual listing, but that's the thing that immediately drew my eye. So I don't necessarily see a problem with the design, although, you know, again, it's going to depend on what this particular niche is looking for.
Yep.
Definition shirts sell in other niches, so there's no reason you wouldn't be able to sell it here. The question is it relevant to the traffic that's coming in? And will everybody who's searching Dungeons and Dragons on Etsy understand or care about the rule of cool? And that's the thing that we have to try to figure out.
Works well. I feel like my keywords make sense. Nothing to me stands out as really weird. Maybe the shipping is too long. I mean, what's that? That's like, I mean, but it's print on demand. I don't know. Maybe there's a way to get faster, or I can only show the faster shipping. I have a few reviews. I also, so I chose this because when I looked at the t-shirts that had in the RPG niche that had the most sales, they tend to have like a very simple.
I love that he's giving us that reason.
Right? Yeah, no, it's great.
And this is a good place to start. And I don't want to totally step on what he's saying, but I have a feeling what he's going to say here is that the reason he chose this is a lot of the other definitional type t-shirts, that's what they're using. Again, great place to start, but what does the data tell us?
Yeah.
Full background. So I went ahead and with that. I have size charts. I have some lifestyle pics of men and women, different colors, everything.
Man, those are so much better to me.
Kind of layout. And then I even put the some of my reviews right in there. And perfect. Then again, I have the 25.
Great.
So Scott, taking a look at this, it mm-hmm. seems like his biggest concern is he thinks there's a conversion rate issue mm-hmm. on this listing. Based on what we've seen so far, is this just a volume of traffic issue, two, a relevant traffic issue, or three, likely to be a conversion rate issue, meaning we're getting traffic, that traffic is relevant, and there's something wrong with the listing itself?
Yeah, no, I honestly, like, I wouldn't even probably be concerned too much with the listing itself. You know, that conversion rate is pretty good for even being that mock-up, but I would want that mock-up to be like one of those lifestyle shots that they had there. But I don't think so. We got a sale running. He already has that running. Okay. I mean, the title looks fine. The only thing I might want to add in there is like, you know, D&D player gift, maybe, even though it's player gift and then D&D, like, I don't know. But other than that, I'm just looking at like, we don't have the right targeted traffic, right? We need more of that. So I think it's a volume play. We need to get more of that. Probably got to give it more time, but we also, I think, need to make sure that we have the right people that are searching for D&D gift for player. Like, that's the keyword we want. Now, I know you can't manually set that, but you can put that in a tag. You can put it in your description. You can put it in the title. You know, maybe that's the title. So that's what I don't think it's a conversion problem on the listing itself as of right now. Everything else looks really good. I think it's more of the traffic is not the right traffic yet.
I think we're somewhere between number one and number two there, right? Volume of traffic and relevance of traffic before we get into the conversion rate. And I think maybe making a few title changes here may help us with that. And the reason that I say that is we're using a lot of industry insider terminology, a lot of acronyms. People who are into TTRPGs know what TTRPGs are, and they would use that abbreviation. The question I would have is, would someone who knows that their son-in-law plays Dungeons and Dragons, would they know what a DM is? Scott, do you know what a DM is?
I have no idea.
Right? And so if you were going to type this in, you would probably type out gifts for people who like Dungeons and Dragons, or t-shirt for, you know, Dungeons and Dragons t-shirt, something like that. They're not necessarily going to use the industry specific term, which is DM, right? That's the dungeon master.
Yeah.
Right. And so by including that, it's not wrong to include that. The question in my mind is it better to include that now or further in the listing, maybe in a tag where it's not as relevant, and use the more spelled out terms that people who are buying something for people in the niche, but people who aren't 19 levels deep in the niche would necessarily use. And I think that may be a small use case, and it may or may not affect traffic. But I think, at least in this case, and Scott, I want your opinion on this, I would probably err on the side of using the spelled out version and then including the abbreviations somewhere else, either in the description or in supporting tags, or maybe at the end of the title. But I would probably lead with, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, cool, rule of cool t-shirt, right? And then add in some of those supporting ones. I'm curious of what your thoughts are on that.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I think it comes down to the traffic. It's a little bit of a combination, but like, I think the traffic coming in needs to be more specific. And again, that just might be, like you said, tweaking the title, adding some things in the tags that might be missing that are more direct, and turning off, starting to train the algorithm, the Etsy ads algorithm, by you turning stuff off and kind of training it that way. So that's what I think here, Chris. I don't think we need to actually, I think he was just wrapping up the video, just asking if we had any suggestions. I think those are our suggestions. And I think this is a really good case of people that they think that because a keyword is related, that it's a good keyword. And in organic, I would agree, but if you're paying for it, that's where you need to start dialing things in. You really, really need to start dialing things in and really looking at the data. And if you're not yet looking at your keywords that are driving traffic, that's one thing you need to start paying attention to. Now, I would say the other example here that was pretty cool for us to be able to share this is like the numbers as far as the demand is there. So that's something that we also look at. That's there. We also look at another positive thing, and that is, well, it looks like the listing is being indexed for all of these keywords. Yes, they're related. That's good, right? Because that tells Etsy that this listing is about this topic, and that's good for organic. But for paid, we want to make sure that we're honing in and we're really fine tuning it. And the one thing I would say too is, just because we're saying that that image wouldn't be the image that we would choose, you would want to test it. You've already ran that. That's fine. Now you might just want to switch it out with the other one and let it run for the same period of time with the same amount of views and see if you get more clicks. And then from there, you can say, okay, instead of getting 3 clicks, we got 6 clicks. Okay, it worked. But the one thing there is to make sure that you let it run its course. All right. So I want to just say, I think these are great. Let me know in the comments, was this helpful? Was this useful, us doing these? Because we might do more of these in the future. And if you would like to download our Etsy ads guide for free, by the way, just put ads in the comments and we'll make sure that we get you a copy. All right. So hopefully this has helped you. Chris, anything else you want to add? I know we got questions. We got another thing we got to address here. Anything else you want to end with?
Yeah, no, Elysian said, don't worry. If someone has a dungeon master in their family, they'll make sure everyone else knows he is one. So apparently, Scott, D&D is like having a vegan or a carnivore in your family. They are going to tell you, or somebody who does CrossFit, right? They're going to tell you that that is what they're doing, and they are going to make sure that you are aware of all of the terminology.
Yeah,
That may be practically the way that that happens, but I would always err on the side of making things as obvious as possible for the non-D&D people. I think the other thing that really stood out to me, Scott, is a lot of people in the comments are saying this is a great niche, but there's a lot of ancillary things. There's a lot of shoulder niches to this that we could expand out into, whether it's other tabletop games, whether it's nerd culture in general, to make sure that we're capturing the most demand. And if people are into some of those other tabletop games, the likelihood that they're into something like D&D is pretty high. And so if there's more demand for those things, then we can add those in. And one great way to know is to go back to that data that we were just looking at, that click-through data, look at some of the keywords that aren't necessarily relevant to the D&D Rule of Cool product, and see if there's some additional ideas that spark from that. We saw a lot of good examples of that. And if you guys are looking for a way to expand your product library, great way to do that is by looking at what is irrelevant traffic to a particular product, but is obviously related in some way enough that Etsy's saying, hey, yeah, you probably might want to get some clicks from here, right? We're going to turn it off for that product. But Etsy thinks that it's related enough that it's likely to be in the same niche, at least worth taking a look at.
Love it. Awesome. Cool. All right. We do have a lot of questions. We will get to as many as we can as soon as we do this last little segment here, which is some Etsy news. So actually, this was, I think it was posted like maybe 2 weeks ago, but let's go ahead and set the stage here, Chris. Let me go ahead and pull up my end. You make sure that you get the news article up, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to dig in here. All right. So there's been a report that an Etsy scammer has, well, taken $2,700 from an innocent lady. Well, how is this possible? Well, Chris, let's pull up the article and let's see exactly what's going on here and how we can protect ourselves from Etsy scammers.
All right. So, Scott, we've heard a lot of things coming out about different ways that people are being scammed. Etsy is doing a lot of different things to try to stop the scammers. And this one was a new one to me. Most people that I've seen getting scammed, it's people trying to get their email address or trying to get their phone number, whatever they're using as that second step to authenticate their Etsy account, to then take over their Etsy account and use that for nefarious purposes.
Yeah.
Right. In this case, someone posing as an Etsy employee was able to get $2,700, not from taking over someone's Etsy account, but by getting them to transfer them $2,700 in Cash App. And if you guys don't know what Cash App is, right, it's basically 21st century PayPal, right? PayPal has been around for a while. Everybody kind of has that as their thing, but it's a way to instantly transfer money between and among friends. And the way that most people will use Cash App, Scott, is let's say you and I go to dinner and you pay for dinner and I want to pay you back. I'll send you the $35 that my dinner cost in Cash App so that we don't have to have that really awkward conversation with the waiter about, can you split the bill? And, oh, did we split the appetite? We don't have to have that conversation. You just pay it. I figure out what half is. And I said, you know, I send you half in Cash
App. It's kind of like Venmo, right?
Yeah, it's basically Venmo. And a lot of scammers have started to use it because they can create fairly anonymous accounts. And it's so easy to transfer money that if you can get somebody on the line, then you can really start to get a substantial sum of money out of them. And what appears to have happened in this case is that somebody posing as an Etsy employee started talking to this person. They said, hey, we have to do this to verify something on the account, right? And different articles about this, you know, refer to this in a slightly different way. But basically, the scammer posed as an employee and they said, hey, your account has been marked as fraudulent. And I'm an Etsy employee. Let me help you get your account back. And in order to do that, what we need you to do is to send us $2,700. Right. Oh, so what they said was, this is a refund procedure. What you need to do is download a computer access program. So one of the things that allows people to take remote control of your computer. And then she transferred $2,700 to a friend via Cash App. However, it wasn't to a friend. It was to this scammer. And
so wait a minute. So Chris, back up, explain this to me, please. I'm having a hard time figuring this out. So walk me through how it happens. I'm on Etsy and I got a message. Where does this message come from?
Yeah. I'm assuming that's how it started. And Etsy has changed this recently, right?
Okay.
Anything that's not coming directly from Etsy will be marked as coming from an Etsy customer. Now, and I think they give you like a little blue badge. This is something they've just started to roll out.
Yep.
But over the last few months, there were a lot of cases where scammers were sending messages saying they were from Etsy, just like this one. And in this case, my assumption is that's how this started. Basically, what happened was the victim went to Google and typed in Etsy customer service thing. And this isn't even a seller. This is a buyer in this case. She ordered something on Etsy and tried to contact customer service. So for sellers, which is where we typically hear these scams happening, they'll send you a message. In this case, somebody had somehow gotten their fake Etsy support phone number to the top of a Google search result. This lady said, hey, my purchase didn't show up. And they said, we can help you with that. Let us be the friendly Etsy people that we are. And all you have to do is download this program and then send me $2,700.
But why would someone send the $2,700? I'm just curious. Was the product $2,700? Like, where is the $2,700 coming from?
So the way that this is being interpreted and the way that I've seen this written about a few different places is basically they said, in order to verify your account, we need you to make a transfer and we will send it right back to you. Right. Okay. Now, for anybody who's watching this, typically, if you needed to verify an account, it would be like one or two pennies and you log in and it happens automatically. You never send any money to anybody. If you've ever hooked your bank account up to anything, including the back end of your Etsy account, right? They'll put like a two penny transaction into your account or take 2 cents out of your account. And then 3 or 4 days later, after they verified it, it comes back. How they got to $2,700, I'm not quite sure, but this is something that's very common with these types of scams. So in this case, wasn't a seller, was a buyer. So we don't have like the buyer-seller messenger thing going on. But it is something that even sellers would want to watch out for, because if this is happening on the buyer side, the chance that they're going to try to replicate this on the seller side and go to Google and rank something that is Etsy seller support phone number, you better be very careful with who you're calling, right? Because this is something that's going to happen. And if you don't know any better, it is very easy, if you are even mildly trusting of anyone, for this to happen. And so if anybody ever asks you to install software on your computer to verify something, if they ask you to send them something outside of the ecosystem where this is happening, whether you're a buyer or a seller, treat it as a scam. Ignore it completely. If you are trying to do something with Etsy, Etsy will not ask you to verify your account details. Why? Because they know what your email address is. You're logged into the account. They will not ask you to transfer them money. They will not ask you to do any of these things as a buyer or a seller. And I have gotten refunds from lots of different purchases over the years, Scott. I have never had to verify an account for somebody to get a refund. They already have my card number on file or my PayPal account or however I paid. If they were going to issue me a refund, all they would have to do is send it back through that payment method. Now, there may be a weird edge case, Scott, where my credit card has expired and I don't get a new one or something like that, and then we have to do something. But guess what they're going to do? They're still not going to ask me to transfer them money because they owe me money. I don't owe them money, right? What they're going to do is send me a physical check or something like that in that case. And so basically what we have here is just a variation of a common scam. We see it a lot with tech support on the Microsoft side, like Microsoft tech support, Apple tech support. And they try to hook somebody who doesn't know any better. They don't know what the customer service process is like with the manufacturer or with the website. And then they're able to take advantage of somebody who is trusting. And Etsy put out, you know, a statement and they said, hey, you know, we've been doing a lot of stuff to try to counter this. In this particular case, there's not a lot that Etsy can do to protect the buyer. But if we're seeing this on the buyer side, we want to make sellers aware of this as well, because we do know there is substantial search volume for Etsy seller support phone number and all of the variations of that. And so, Scott, is there any basic recommendation that you would give to people on the seller side on how to avoid not just this scam, but all of the different variations that we've seen pop up over the last few months? Scott, I think you're muted.
That's better.
I thought it was me.
So the very first thing is common sense. Like, we have to use some basic common sense right now. If someone asks you to transfer money or confirm your social security number or any of that stuff within a message type thing, then I would like red flag it. Okay. So just be careful, be smart. And if you ever have any suspicion, then you just would want to go in and create a new message yourself that would be asking, hey, I got this notification. Is this something that I need to do? Like, just confirm it before you would ever do anything. Because we have been hearing sellers getting taken also on the other end of it, where they hand over the keys to their shop basically by giving them information about their login or their banking information. Or their credit card. So you want to be careful. I know now they are saying that there's going to be a blue verification thing, but guess what? Scammers are going to know that, and scammers are going to create their own little blue thing. So that's where you have to be careful. I know myself, if I ever get anything from my credit card, like maybe it's a voicemail or maybe it's even a text message, I always don't click anything. I'll just go to the, or I'll call, and I will, and I know with Etsy, we can't really call, which you should be able to, but we can't. But I usually call the company and I'm like, hey, I got this text, you know, is this accurate? You know, or someone phishing? So that's just, to me, common sense. $2,700. Like, if I'm sending $2,700, I'm double, triple check in to make sure, like, what the heck am I doing here? $2,700. Like, who comes up with that number? So just be careful about what you are, what you're sending people. And as far as money goes, you should never have to transfer money in order to verify anything.
And if you do, it's going to be like a penny or 5 cents, yes, right? And it will happen automatically. You should never have to send money to somebody, especially if they owe you money, right? Like, this is the opposite of me trying to buy something. Right. You're supposed to give me a refund. You don't need to verify anything. If you were legitimate, you'd have my credit card on file.
Right.
all of those kinds of things. So apply a little bit of common sense, but keep in mind that these things do happen. And as sellers, just think about the information Etsy already has on hand. Yeah. If you have an actual problem, it's going to show up in your dashboard, not just in the email version of your messages. And when in doubt, what I have noticed, Scott, is the mobile app, not the place to go. Etsy's website, log into the seller side of that, and you'll get a much clearer picture of what's going on. They have the from Etsy inbox. They're now marking things as, you know, basically any account that's not an official account, whether it's a buyer or a seller, should be coming through with those like blue notifications now.
Yeah.
Again, how long that will be effective for, no one knows. But let's, if we apply a little bit of common sense here, we can start to avoid these. So if Etsy sends you an email asking for your email to verify it, well, they just emailed you, right? Like they have those things. They shouldn't need your phone number for anything unless they're calling you back for a ticket that you created, right? They're not going to need any of those pieces of information because they already have it on file. And if anybody ever asks you to verify anything outside of the platform, run for the hills, right? Etsy's going to do everything they can to verify those things inside of the platform.
Cool. All right. I think we've got time for some questions here, Chris. Let's go ahead and let's start with some of the Backstage Pass Club members. And if you guys are just tuning in and you want to know what the heck is the Backstage Pass Club, well, it is where we meet once a month and we record, we do a batch recording of our Etsy shop audits that air on the YouTube channel. But generally they are 4 to 6 weeks behind, but we batch record those and we have our Backstage Pass Club members come in and join us for about a 3-hour session. And they also get to ask questions and they get their questions answered on any of these lives that we do on the YouTube channel as well. They get priority. So if you would like to be part of the club, we'd love to have you. It's where the cool kids hang out, I've been told. And you can go to brandcreators.com/club. And you can hang out with us. And there's the link right there, right on the, well, it was just there on the screen. Chris took it off real quick there. He's really quick with that thing. Look at that. So if you guys want to join, there you go. All right, Chris.
Now I'm just messing with you. Right?
Now you're just messing with me.
Kind of fun you get to have when you come backstage. You get to watch Scott and I mess with each other.
There is
nonstop.
Yeah, there is some pretty funny stuff that happens behind the scenes. I'm not gonna lie, but okay, let's get rocking and rolling, Chris. Where do you want to start with the questions?
And said, taking the ads class now, it's fantastic. Glad to hear that you're getting a lot of value out of that. I think if you are just getting started, my suggestion would be drop a comment below, get the ads guide, and then when you're ready to really hone in the ads, go ahead and take a look at the ads training that we offer as well. If you think that that's something that you need. Sherry Poppins said, I'm advertising 6 out of 104 listings at $25 per day for the last 30 days. 7,700 views, 54 clicks, $18.67 in ad spend. It just doesn't make much sense to me. So the very first thing that I'm seeing here, Scott, is we probably have a very limited number of listings. The impressions are okay for 30 days. I would want to see substantially more impressions than that if we're advertising 6 listings. But again, that's going to depend on the market. What is the first thing that really stands out to you here?
$25 a day. I'm just trying to understand the data here. So $25 a day, 30 days, those are the views, those are the clicks, and that's how much was spent, $18.67. Yep. I think we have a demand issue, or like we had talked before, we have a problem with not targeting the right keywords that have demand. So it's one of those is what I'm seeing. Because if you're willing to spend $25 a day, and that's what you're getting back in return, it's clearly a demand issue or an optimization for the demand is what I would say.
We're only spending $18 out of whatever 30 times 25 is, $700. Let's just call it that. We're going to have 2 issues that I see here. The first one is not a lot of demand if that's our upper end limit. The second is our click-through rate. And somebody correct me in the comments if I math incorrectly here, but that's like a 0.6% click-through rate. So just over 0.5%. I would want to see it at least double that. And so what I would be doing, Sherry, is taking a look at the listings, start going through that process and seeing, are those impressions relevant to what you're selling? And if they are, then we have an issue either with that thumbnail image, we need to add in some video, or we need to play with our title a little bit to make it sure it's more obvious than what it is currently. Following up on questions relating to the 25% off sale, should I make my option coupon 30% to make it better than regular sales? You can. And Scott, one thing that I did notice is even though he didn't say it in that interview, they actually did make a change on the back end of Etsy to make 25% now the default.
Yeah.
If you are selecting a percentage off promotion, you can still change it to whatever you want by selecting the custom option, but they are setting that by default because what they noticed is that is kind of the minimum where they start to see a big conversion rate increase. And I know we're going to get a lot of people in the comments that are saying they're just creating a culture of discount buyers. Guess what? That's the entire world. If you can get the same thing for 25% less, wouldn't you rather buy it for 25% off?
Yeah.
If not, just send me that 25% and I will buy it for 25% off and keep the difference. Right. So I wouldn't worry too much about that, but is 30% that much better than 25% if 25% is now the new default?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, let's face it. You know, if you're willing to go higher on your percentage off, it's definitely going to bring attention. But is it going to make that much of a difference if it's like the same product? Yes, if it's the product that's different and, you know, you have a differentiator there, then it's probably not going to matter, you know? So I think it comes down to if you can do it and if you can afford it, then I would say, yeah, it's going to probably increase conversions. So it's not a bad thing. I did want to say that though, Chris, like we need to pay attention to what Etsy is telling us, right? They have the data. They don't give us the data unless we're paying for it with the Etsy ads for our own stuff, but we don't know what's working on other things, right? That's why they, you know, they recently switched their pictures to square because they saw that it was a better conversion for people. Now they're looking at like the abandoned carts. They're going to, you know, shorten the time that they're going to be available. So they're going to expire. Why? Because they know that that will probably increase conversion. So we need to pay attention and say, oh, they're saying default is 25. They're not just putting it there for no reason. We knew it was 10% before, but now it's 25. So let's lean into that. Let's use their data that they're giving us to make these decisions. And then just do better, you know? So, yeah.
I like that. Just do better.
Just do better, man.
The new says, my comment disappeared. So I limited my budget to $32 a day and Etsy doesn't spend it all. Should I increase it? So you didn't limit it to $32 a day if Etsy isn't spending it all, right? Etsy limited it to less than $32 a day. Right. The answer would be there's no reason to increase it at this point unless you're spending like $31.50, right? If you're under that budget, what we need to figure out is do we have a demand issue or can we just include more products? And that would be where I would focus. Anytime that you're increasing that budget, it should be because you're getting real close to that daily budget with extremely optimized, highly relevant traffic. Woodcrafter says, when you set your ad budget to $1 a day, you have 40 items listed to run ads to. Are you potentially spending $40 per day or just $1 per day across all of those listings? And the answer is that budget is across everything that you have in that ads bucket. And that's why it's so important, Scott, to really make sure that that traffic is optimized. Because if not, then we're robbing potential ad spend from the other products.
Yep.
There's not really a good way inside of Etsy right now to create more than one campaign. In fact, there's not any way that I'm aware of where we could single out individual products. So if we have one product that's doing really well, we do have to account for that in the ad spend. But if we have 40 in and we're just getting started, that budget's always going to be spread across all of those. And so we don't have to worry too much about that. The other question I know that we're going to get if we haven't gotten that already is when do I get charged? You don't get charged on the impressions. You only get charged when somebody clicks. So having the irrelevant impressions, not that big of a deal. Nice to get that data back, but it is something we want to try to avoid long-term because if we start getting clicks on those, that's actually detrimental to us long-term.
Hey, Chris, I just wanted to give you a heads up. I'm good. I don't have a hard stop now. So okay. We had a little bit of a cancellation.
Do you want to roll through these and then do the other quick piece of news that we wanted to talk about? Or
yeah, we can do that for sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Sherry Poppins said, I did a giveaway. Thanks to you guys using that sweet, sweet fishbowl method. I gained almost 400 subs. It's a good example of gaining when you are willing to spend. And it doesn't have to be that expensive. That's something you can do for just a few bucks a day.
Yeah.
Just like ads to start to build that email list. Karibe says, I'm trying to figure out my slow versus peak times. I'm running $15 in ads, but spending $12 to $13 a day. January, 35 sales, 15 in February. So far this month, only 8 sales. high ticket items, so good revenue. Seeing a difference in sales between January, February, and March is not uncommon. Again, where your main thrust of sales is going to depend on your niche and the time of year. But yeah, typically, we will see traffic start to kind of decrease. We'll see another increase around the middle of May and beginning of June. And then we'll see that kind of dip off in July and August as people are just on summer vacation, at least in the US, right? And then we'll start to see that pick up the end of August, beginning of September, increasing in December. There are going to be some exceptions to that rule, but what we will typically see is that big spike followed by a slow dip and then like a little hill and then back into that big spike as we get into the end of August, beginning of September. Does your Etsy matter?
Hold on, one second. I just wanted to go back. So the one thing I wanted to highlight that we kind of glazed over is they said it was high revenue though, right? So it's a high ticket item. So when you have a high ticket item, like, yes, you're getting less sales, but you're still making more money. So my thing here is like, if anybody has the opportunity to create a higher priced item, you should be doing that because one sale can equate to five sales. And I mean, just as much as like, let's just take, for example, if you sold a blanket and it was $80, $90 and you make $30 on that, or you sell a sweatshirt and you make $12 on it, it's the same amount of work, right? It's just a different item. So just something to think about. And that kind of caught my attention when they said that.
Jay Ferrari just shared a live update. Said, just reached profitability right now with my ads. Awesome. Keep it rolling. Keep it growing. Keep alternating between level two and level three.
Yep.
And you'll be able to scale that. Does it matter? Does your Etsy ads goal matter? And if you guys are unfamiliar with this, when you go in to set up your Etsy ads the first time, it'll ask you what your ads goal is. I haven't noticed a single bit of difference.
No.
And I haven't seen anything in their handbook that says that it changes how you show in the algorithm. It seems to just be that they're collecting data on that for now. Yeah. Will it matter at some point? Probably. Does it have a small influence? Potentially, but we've alternated between and among the different goals, and I haven't noticed a single bit of difference. If anybody has a decent case study where they said, you know, I did this for 60 days and then I switched it on the exact same ad spend, you know, let us know. But I haven't seen anything, even in our own testing with that, that makes it a bit of difference. So I got a similar message asking me to verify my banking information. So going back to the scammer article,
yeah,
I checked account and saw nothing, so I never responded. And this is a good best practice, is you'll see it show up under like the Etsy messages tab in the back end on desktop. If you get an email, ignore it, get to the Etsy website and see if it looks like it's potentially coming from Etsy, and then just double check it with that second sanity step of like, why would they be asking me for my banking information or my Cash App ID?
Right.
Install monitoring software on my computer, right, so remotely access and go into my Etsy account and create the refund. That stuff should never happen.
Yep.
Overcoming child loss says, newbie stupid question. There's no such thing as a stupid question except for, is this a stupid question? When turning off broad keywords in ads, is it just for the ad and those keywords continue to be in the original listing for organic traffic? So yes, based on our experience, turning off keywords that you are relevant for on the ad side doesn't have an impact on the organic side of things, because if you're relevant on the organic side, they're going to continue to rank you for that, regardless of what you tell them, whether you're running ads or not. If you're relevant for it, you're relevant for it on the organic side, right? Ads tend to be more open than the organic side. So what you will find with ads, if you compare that beta, which drives me insane, search analytics report, the organic side, to the ads report, you'll notice there's a broader variety of keywords that show up when you are running ads. And it's because Etsy says, well, you might not be hyper relevant on the organic side for this, but if you're willing to pay us, we'll show you, and then just tell us you don't want to show for it because that keyword isn't working for you. So you won't typically see a lot of those broader keywords. So for like the Rule of Cool t-shirt, you might not see TTRPG necessarily on the organic traffic side, you know, somewhere in the listing, but because Etsy knows that that's a search term that's related to the listing potentially based on everything else, they'll drop that in on the paid side, which is why we have to be a little bit more careful. And it's also the only place where we really have control over what keywords we're showing for. Elysian said, oh, I saw that statement from the Etsy CEO. He also said chatbots are going to be a big part of the future, text-based front ending of the gifting AI. And that is something, if you guys are more interested in kind of some of the implications of that, let us know in the comments. That's something we'll cover in a separate session, if that's something you guys are really into, and how that could potentially impact Etsy's SEO algorithm and how we rank for things. But that's not something we wanted to do a deep dive in on today. So if you guys are interested in that, let us know in the comments.
Yeah. Cool. Did we answer most of them, Chris?
I think so. Elysian said, I'm very disappointed Chris hasn't said it depends once. I'm extremely it depends. When I say that, there has to be a conditional, right? Yeah. And so all of this stuff today, ironically, with ads information has been fairly black and white. There's not a lot of it depends type of information that we've gone through today.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
Yeah. So Scott, we have that other one queued up if you have a couple minutes to do that. Cause I think,
yeah, let's do it.
Cover it differently.
Yeah. Let's do it. That was, we're talking about the abandoned carts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, cool. Let's do it. So a bit of news from Etsy that, we've become aware of is that Etsy sellers have been having a problem with deactivating the abandoned carts. And this could be a problem. So Chris, could you pull up the article and can we take a look and see what the heck is going on? And is there anything that we need to do or anything that we need to be aware of? Because, you know, if we want to turn this off, we want to be able to turn it off.
And I think this is a classic case of misunderstanding, misconfusion, and a little bit of potential tech problems, right? So you guys may have heard by now that Etsy made a change a couple weeks ago on how they handle all of their, what we refer to, Scott, as their internal marketing offers, right? Your abandoned carts, your favorites, and your thank you coupons, the ones that go out automatically to people based on behavior. So if you're not aware of how those work, basically, you go in, you say, if somebody abandons their cart, I want to be able to send them a 15 or, if you take the advice of Etsy, 25% or more off coupon, right? If they favorite an item, I want them to be able to get that. If they buy something from me, I want them to get this, right? You can set up promotions in those specific instances. And they didn't do a great job of communicating those changes with sellers. There's a few mistruths or just missed things in this article, but there also seems to be a few sellers who did have technical issues. So the title of this article, the headline of this article is Etsy sellers unable to deactivate abandoned cart promotions. There's just no way to turn this off. There is, at least in the different accounts that I've looked at. Now, if it's missing from your particular account, put in a tech ticket, but they did change the verbiage. And I think that's part of the confusion. There used to be a button and Scott, I think it said like deactivate offer.
Yeah,
something
yeah,
it like did. That. Now, if you go into one of these offers on the back end, you have to click into the details and it just says stop sending. And I think where the confusion came in, and a lot of this, the information in this article that made it seem like people just couldn't turn this off, mm-hmm. was a misunderstanding. And again, like I think it's Etsy's support chat where not communicating very clearly and people taking that and kind of blowing it up where they said, okay, I can't stop sending these to people. And they were like, well, you know, once it goes out, there's not a way to turn it off because by default now you have it's 60 days on the abandoned cart and 1 year on the thank you coupon. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Yes. So I believe so.
What they are saying is if you send that to someone, so Scott, you come to my Etsy shop, you add something to your cart and I send you that offer today. If I go in and deactivate that, that doesn't mean that you, as someone who previously added to cart and got that promo,
yep,
can't still use that coupon or that promo code until it expires. And I think that's where the miscommunication came in. And they have done a better job. And I may pull it up here in a minute just to show the verbiage under their little question mark thing next to the stop sending feature of explaining the way that this works. But if we think about it that way, Scott, does that make sense? Where if you as the seller stop sending that offer out, is it hurting you as the seller to not be able to cancel the coupons that you've already sent? Or should Etsy be erring on the side of buyers here?
That's a tough one because, you know, I do think that we should be able to have control. But in the same breath, if, you know, if you have a coupon that was sent to someone and it had a 60 day from the time that they added it to their cart, and then in the midst of it, you decide to deactivate it and they don't get it, you know, that, I don't know, that could seem bad because then it looks bad on your shop, right? That you're doing that because in their head, and not even, I don't even know if the buyers are aware that it's a 60 day coupon. I don't know if it says you have 60 days, but I do think that that could be a bad buyer experience. So I personally think we should be okay with it as a seller, as right now, that like we've committed to that. So keep your price accordingly. So this way here, you know that, you know, if you went lower than that, you're not going to lose out, because if you change your price and you lower your price and that coupon's still there, you could be taking a loss. So I don't really think that it should hurt us as long as we're aware of it. Now, with that being said, I am a little disappointed that Etsy did not give us more control over that. I don't like 60 days. I would rather make mine 7 days, but why can't I? So it's just by default, it's 60 days and the other one's a year. I think a year is a long time, and there's no follow-up on that. So I guess we're not really talking about that, but that's what I'm most disappointed with, is that we don't have the time or the expiration, that we can set the time of the expiration. So this way here, the buyers are being notified. So I know that wasn't directly related to your question, but I think that us sellers should have more control, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And I think when they initially made this change, there may have been some technical issues where people didn't have the button or whatever, but the major gripe that I've seen, and a big portion of the article was talking about people complaining in the Etsy seller forum that they couldn't cancel coupons that were already sent. Yeah. And if you don't have that button, maybe you can make a case for that. But I want to propose a hypothetical to you, Scott. You're a pizza guy. By the way, how was that single slice you got the other day?
Oh, it was amazing.
So you'd go back, right?
Yeah, I would go back if I was cheating.
You buy that single slice. You and your son buy two slices, and he hands you a coupon and he says, you can come back, bring the family anytime in the next 2 months, and I'll give you 25% off a whole pie. How's that sound? You go, great. You walk in the door, you load up the dogs, you bring your kids, you bring everybody in. One day before that coupon code expires this Friday. Mm. You go in Thursday for lunch or for dinner. And he goes, yeah, I just decided I'm not doing that anymore. How would you feel as the buyer, right? So there, whether it's legal or not is a different question. And that's a whole messy area. But if we're thinking about this from a customer service perspective, yeah, it would make sense that if you sent an offer and you meant it at the time, that they can continue to redeem that for that period. Mm-hmm. Now, 60 days on an abandoned cart, a little crazy.
It's a long time.
A year on a thank you offer, I'd love to be able to change that. And the verbiage that they're using implies that we might be able to change that at some point.
Yeah.
I would love that ability, right? So as long as there's not like a weird technical reason that you can't stop sending the offer,
yeah,
I don't really see the argument or why you would be mad that people are redeeming the promotion that you created. If you have a technical issue, I totally get that. And Etsy should cover the redemption of those,
yeah, right?
But other than that, I get that you might not get that logically until you think through it that way as the buyer. Like if I stop the offer, it should just go away. But if we think about it from the buyer perspective, you've told me that I have until Y date to redeem this. And now you're telling me that it's not good. That's a terrible customer service experience,
yeah,
and is likely to not only drive people away from Etsy, but very likely to result in some bad reviews on your stuff specifically. And so yeah. I wanted to point that out really fast. And Scott, if people aren't aware of how to do this, I wanted to pull this up really fast and just show people how easy it is to go in and change these, right? So all you have to do is click details and it will take you into anything else that you have active, right? Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is click this stop sending offers here. And what they're saying is very specifically now exactly what we were just talking about. This was not here previously. And so they're saying, hey, this will stop things from going out,
yep,
but any codes that have already been sent are redeemable for the time period that is left. So if they were sent 364 days ago, they're redeemable for a day. If they were sent yesterday, they're redeemable basically for that entire year.
Yeah.
The other thing that they've done is they've come in and they've added these in. And they're basically saying, here's exactly when this will go out, and here's what this is active for, right? So in the case of the thank you one, they're saying once it has shipped, then they'll get an email with the offer. And they'll only get it if they're opted in to get emails. The thing I thought was interesting, Scott, because the place we heard a lot of pushback from people was on the abandoned cart. And mm-hmm. the article that we were just talking about made it seem like they overnight changed it from, a day or 2 days to 2 hours?
Yeah.
24 hours to 2 hours, I think, yep, was the change they made. And that they just did this. They actually did it back in January. I think it was like January 4th or January 5th. So that's not a new thing. But what they are saying is basically, hey, this will now go out, and there's a bunch of conditionals on this. So if we just
now that's say, new, Chris. Now that's new, where it says include abandoned carts from the last 30 days. That was 90 days before.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing that stands out. And the reason it can't be 90 days is because the code's only good for 60. Exactly. But there's a handful of other things in here that I thought were interesting, right? So first, Etsy is telling us that 25% is the discount amount that you should be using for optimal conversion as a bare minimum. They changed that as the default when you create a code, a promo code yourself. They have not changed that here yet. Right. Yeah. It's still 10%. You can select 25% or whatever from the dropdown, and they give you up to 70% in the abandoned cart offers. But if I hit create an offer here, we can then see all of the conditionals. Mm-hmm. So they're saying they've left it in the last 30 days and the offer expires in 60 days. But there was a little piece of information in here that I wanted to dive into really quick. And so they tell you who they automatically send it to, but they did change some of the eligibility. And this is something I know a lot of people were concerned with, so I wanted to point this out. They're saying it expires after 60 days, and here's exactly when it will be sent. Buyers will be sent an abandoned cart offer again if they don't have one active. So people were really worried about people coming in and stacking these things.
Yeah.
Or in the case of changing your price or changing the offer, right, and having a better offer than was in the past, and, oh, people are just going to add stuff to see what your offer is. Well, if they already have one from you, they can't get one from you. And if they have redeemed an abandoned cart coupon from your store within the last 30 days, not eligible for the abandoned cart coupon.
Yeah, that's good.
So I think Etsy has gone a pretty long way, even though they didn't give us a lot of the things that we wanted them to give us. They are doing a little bit of a better job of communicating these things.
Yeah, that's
good.
And
they're getting there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all good because it is. It's answering that question that a lot of people had, which was, you know, can people stack them? You know, what if someone just starts to be trained that all they got to do is add something to a cart to get a discount? Well, they're only going to get it that one time for the last 30 days. And then I believe it resets. So yeah, could someone come back after the 30 days and do it? Yes. But so what? You know what I mean? Like if someone's going to go to that extent, and most time people are going to forget, you know, they're not going to remember like, oh, here's a little hack. I can go in and do an add to cart and I can get a coupon every time, you know, and that's up to you. Maybe you don't want to run it all the time, or maybe you change it from 10% to 20% or 20% to 10%. So it could change as well. So I wouldn't necessarily worry about that, but it is good that they're putting some of these precautions in there to deter, or not even deter, to make it so someone can't abuse it to a certain extent. Chris, I want to go back though real quick to your pizza analogy. Number one, I'm hungry now and I'm eating clean, so I won't be having that pizza, but I can taste that pizza. And it was a good piece of pizza. It was a big piece of pizza. But to your point, if I brought my family there to take, you know, them and get the 25% off, and I went there and they're like, I'm sorry, you're a day late. That would make me very upset. Like, I'd be like, seriously? Like, I can see if it's like, okay, it's, and again, maybe it was on there, right? I would say if there was a 60-day expiration on there and I came a day after, that restaurant owner is probably going to be like, you know what? Come on in. I want your family to come on in because they know I'm going to come back again. Right. But now if that coupon did expire and it was 60 days after it expired, I can't expect them to do that. Now, of course, we don't have the option to send people an email and explain all this stuff. But I would say to your point, like, I don't want someone getting that and going over there and then being disappointed or having to jump through hoops to buy from me. So I'm with you. I think that it should be honored and I think we should be okay with it.
Yeah. And I don't know why, like if you were cool with it 60 days ago, you're probably still cool with it today. Now, yeah. The 1 year thing is kind of weird until we think about the fact that it's a thank you coupon, right? So
yeah.
Like it's somebody who's already bought from us. And if they're coming back to buy from us again, do we really care? Oh, and by the way, these things were unlimited in the past,
right?
It is, you know, it is a little disconcerting that some people are having tech issues, but you know, again, that's up to Etsy how they deal with it. If I was Etsy and somebody pointed out they didn't have a stop sending button, I would either go in their back end and cancel those offers or just say, look, we'll take care of this. Like I can stop it on the back end. And if anybody redeems these coupons, we'll give you credit for that. That would be the right customer service move, I think, on the back end. Scott, the other thing I wanted to talk about with this really quickly was a lot of people are saying, oh, this is just going to train discount buyers. So first of all, like these offers are not new, right? So this is something that's been going on forever. Or the other one is people are just going to add stuff to their cart to try to get the abandoned cart offer. Well, if you've ever bought anything online, you have probably seen some sort of an abandoned cart offer at some point.
Yeah.
And it's not like Etsy invented this, right? And so if that's the case, is there going to be somebody who always tries to abuse the system? Are there going to be people who do that?
Sure.
Yeah. Is that the vast majority of people? No. The average statistic for abandoned carts is around 70%, right? It floats somewhere between 67 and 75, depending on the study that you look at. So let's just call it 70%. So by putting your foot in the ground and saying, I'm never going to offer this because the only people that want this anyway are the people who are just putting stuff in their cart to see if I send them a coupon, you're losing out on 70% of your potential sales, right? The reason that abandoned cart offers exist is because they help you recapture a big portion of that 70% of people. And if what we're proposing here, that people are just going to start adding stuff to their cart to see if they get a coupon, were true, we would have seen that number fluctuate a lot more over the last few years as these things became more common. And it stayed pretty steady. And the reason for that is there's only a handful of real reasons that people abandon their carts. The excuse to contact them and give them a little bit of a discount to push them back over the edge and be back at top of mind is the reason that abandoned cart coupons work. Typically, and Scott, I want your opinion on this as well, price of the product is not really the objection. What happens in the case of most abandoned carts is they go, okay, by the time they're adding it to their cart, they're not really thinking about price, right? They're like, I got this. The place where that might not be the case is if you add a bunch of shipping and stuff in on the back end. Different conversation, right? But if they know the price and that's the price that they're going to get, the reason they abandon the cart is they want a little bit more information. Maybe they go to Amazon to see if the product is there at a cheaper price. Maybe they Google around to see if you're a trustworthy brand. Or maybe their dog walks in the room, knocks over their light, and they have to go do something about it, right? And the reason that abandoned carts work is it just brings you back to top of mind. And unfortunately, Etsy doesn't give us a way to contact people outside of giving the discount. But what I've noticed on traffic that we control is even just sending a reminder email gives us almost the same response. And then we offer a discount further down that road if they don't, you know, come back right away. But getting that contact point, even if it's a 5 or 10% off coupon, right? Yeah. We go against the Etsy advice of 25% or more. We're bringing people back top of mind. And so I would say the vast majority of those 70%, it's not a price-based objection. It's literally anything else that happens in life. What are your thoughts on that? What's your experience been with abandoned carts?
No, I agree with you 100%. And I don't think we need to keep going down that road. But the one thing I would add is like, and I'd like to know in the comments if anyone else does this, but I've done it. My wife's done it. Have you ever added stuff to cart just so you don't lose it and you can come back later? It's kind of like your bookmarking system. Like, I know we do that on Amazon, and I'll go in and I'll ask my wife, do you want this? Is in there? No, I just wanted to save it. I go, okay, I'll save it for later. So then I save it and I put it in the save for later. Okay. But it's another way for us to kind of like, okay, I'm not going to buy it right now. I'm interested in it. And yes, you could favorite it, but a lot of times people are like, yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to get that. I'm just going to add it to my cart. And then who knows, you might not buy anything for a week, but if you got a reminder or a little bit of a nudge, you might buy it quicker. Okay. And because you're that interested that you added it to your cart. So that's just something I don't think people, they don't think of it that way. There's a lot of people using the add to cart just as a bookmark, right? And it's them saying they're interested, but it's a bookmark so they can come back to it later. So just keep that in mind too, for these offers. And I'm with you, Chris. I mean, even a 5%, if that's all you want to do, it's just another way for you to get a message sent on your behalf from Etsy. Cool. Let's blow through a couple questions here that we had sneak in. I think there was a few here, and I had one here that yes, I do it all the time, mostly on Amazon. Definitely, yeah. Okay, cool. This one here. Okay, this was a good one too. I run my sales for about 5 days a week to create urgency. Don't know if it's the best process, but it works for me. Oh, that was because someone else had a question as far as, here it is. How long should a sale last? Currently running 8 days. Yeah, we like between 5 and 7 days. Generally, it's 7 days because it's easy, right? It's like, oh, every Monday morning, we're going to start a new sale. And then you just start a new sale. And that creates that urgency. It also creates the deadline as far as like when it gets closer, it says 6 hours left. And it does all those things. So that would be our recommendation there. That's what we do.
They really need to give people a nudge when the coupon is about to expire. I can't remember what I did this morning, let alone a coupon.
I agree.
A month before. If you asked me what I had for dinner last night, I probably could not tell you.
I could.
I cooked it. now I'm thinking.
Lisa made some really good bean burgers, so I know what I had.
Right. But, and that's kind of our point. Like the little nudge is nice. And you will typically see, especially with something like an abandoned cart, you'll typically see the most activity within the first day. And that's, Scott, the thing that drove me nuts with that article was they dedicated a whole section of that article to talking about all of the sellers complaining that an abandoned cart coupon is now going out after 2 hours instead of after 24. Right. And that is exactly the same point I think that Sophie was making. If you add something to your cart, unless you're doing it for the bookmarking thing, like I'm definitely going to come back to this later. Maybe I want to put all my Christmas gifts in my Etsy cart and purchase it all at once. That's not typical buyer behavior. The industry standard is to send out an abandoned cart within the first hour. Why? Because that's when you're going to recapture people the most. Why? Because the real reason people abandon cart is one, to go look for a coupon code on, you know, shadycouponcodes.net or whatever. Two, because they got distracted, you know, their wife or their boss walked in the room and they don't, you know, they don't want to get caught online shopping when they shouldn't be online shopping. Three, you know, their dog walked in, knocked milk or tea all over their keyboard. Or four, something else just happened in their life and they got distracted. The sooner we can get people's attention back, the more likely they are to purchase that. So Etsy did bring that down a few months ago from 24 hours to 2 hours on the abandoned cart, but it's still actually beyond where industry standard would be. And so I'm curious to see, and I think it may just be a fact that a lot of Etsy sellers don't have experience running their own e-commerce sites. They've used Etsy as the platform to do that. And so if Etsy's goal is to get as many sales as possible, then they should be reducing the time frame on these kinds of things from 24 to less than an hour, right? Getting into that 2 hour window, great. Because what they're trying to do is optimize the usage of that. If you don't want to send abandoned carts because you think it's just creating a culture of discount buyers, don't. Realize that you're leaving 70% of those potential sales on the table. But keep in mind that if the goal, and I think the goal in this for me would be that people do use that coupon, we want it to be as effective as possible. And so, yes, Etsy did make a big change there, but it's actually good if you're coming at this from the goal of trying to make as many sales as possible versus trying to make as much margin as possible. And my argument there, Scott, would be if that's your goal, then just don't run the coupon, right? Like just turn it off. Assuming Etsy didn't disable the stop sending button in your account for whatever reason,
right.
Just don't create the offers and then you don't have to worry about the time frame. But if you're running one of those offers, it should be, the goal behind that shouldn't just be to send an email. It should be to get more sales. And we should want Etsy to do as much as possible. And I think that's why you and I have been kind of rambling and ranting for the last few weeks about like, hey, can you like give us a little bit more control than 60 days or 1 year? Or
at least
tell us that you're going to send a reminder a few days before it expires. Like text message, smoke signal, carrier pigeon, don't really care. Give them some sort of notification that it's going to expire. Because our goal when we run these promos is that people actually use the coupon code.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to wrap it up, folks. Went a little bit longer today. Ended up finding out that my daughter's beach volleyball practice was canceled. So didn't have to do that. So usually I got to cut out of here. Hard stop. But we didn't have to today. So guys, do us a favor. If you got value from this, smash the like button. Would you do that for us? Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't yet done so. That helps us in the algorithm, helps us reach more people. And that's what we want to do. We want to help more people win. If you would like a copy of our Etsy ads guide for free, by the way, just comment ads in the comments and we'll send you a copy. The other thing we mentioned a little bit was about our Backstage Pass Club. And if you would like to be part of that, where we meet once a month and we go over and really help people with their Etsy shops, we do Etsy shop audits. We do it for a batch recording session for our Etsy shop audits that we post here on the channel. And you get them before they actually go live. You get them where they're raw, unedited, behind the scenes, us kind of doing this and also answering a whole bunch of questions. And if any of you are here right now, which I know you are because I can see the badges, if you guys are Backstage Pass Club members, tell them why they should join. It's where the cool kids hang out, right? That's what we've said inside the club. So anyway, if you guys would like to join us, you can head on over to brandcreators.com/club, or you can go to the join button here on the YouTube channel, and that'll take you to the same place. So for under 10 bucks a month, you can hang out with us. You can get to sit behind the scenes as we do these recordings for our show that airs on Thursdays, and you'll get it weeks, sometimes months before it actually airs. So yeah, we've got one coming out tomorrow that will be on Etsy ads, of course. So another one like we did kind of today, but it's where we did a deep dive with some Etsy ads for one of our Backstage Pass club members. So you're probably going to want to stay tuned for that one. So guys, that is going to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for hanging out with us for just over 2 hours. A lot of stuff going on here. And we appreciate each and every one of you. And if you have any other questions for us, you can always drop them in the comments, or you can come back here next week and we'll be showing up live for another topic and some more news on Etsy. All right. Take care. Take action. We'll talk to you soon. Bye, guys.